Defending Tomorrow Tonight. It's your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tomorrow's News Tonight. I am Chase Geyser. I am joined by Ian Carroll. Ian, I ranted at you for like 4 minutes straight. I'm going to give you a chance to respond. You had thoughts. I can't even remember what I said.
Sometimes you just get in flow, and that is how the news goes. The news is coming at us like a fire hose these days.
Yes.
And when dots start to connect and click, it's just sometimes you have to let the flow take over and, you know, see where it leads. Because just now during the break, I was talking with you about whether or not this reporting on the treasonous conspiracy, Tulsi Gabbard calling for prosecution of Barack Obama, Jim Comey, John Brennan, and others, that they are breaking new ground in the Russia hoax. It, like, in some ways, in isolation, that story feels like such old news. Like,
I mean, everybody knew 8 years ago, but now that the institutions are actually admitting it, that's kind of a big deal.
Exactly. It is a big deal the institutions are admitting it, but at the same time, it's Trump's institutions that are admitting it. So it's that
it, like, is, but they have real evidence.
Exactly, right? And so there's two dogs in me. One is like, yeah, I already know what this thing says without even reading it.
Yeah.
And the other of me is like, ah, that's kind of cool. But now, I don't know if it was you actually putting these dots together, if I was just connecting them for you in my mind, but hearing Trump starting, like, you know, rumblings of like, is Trump in the Epstein files? And, oh, they, you know, fabricated this other conspiracy, and maybe they're not releasing the Epstein files because the Democrats fabricated Trump into the Epstein files. It's like, that's an interesting theory. And you said off air just a second ago, like, whether it's true or not, it might be their angle that they're trying to play. Right. And I'd be really curious to dig that open a little more because
Do you think Trump's in the Epstein files?
I mean, I think the Epstein files are a amorphous blob of information that just documents Epstein's life through witness testimony and through, you know, investigations and surveillance and all these things. And certainly Trump was in Epstein's life and they were friends at a time. And so I think certainly he's in the files. I mean, he's in like several people's testimony, I think, including Joanna Schoberg, but I forget exactly which women testified about hearing about Trump, meeting Trump, right, et cetera. But that I think Trump is strangely afraid of his involvement with Epstein in a way that might be his ego.
Then why would he have signed the EO to release the files? I think he didn't know that he was in there until he signed the EO and they brought it to him.
You think not?
Yes. Otherwise, he never would have signed it.
Interesting. That's a good point.
I mean, why would you sign for the declassification of documents that incriminate you knowingly and then backpedal?
Well, there's a huge difference between incriminate you knowingly and like you're mentioned in them, right? In the Epstein case, there's all sorts of nuance between people that, sure, like, you know, rode on the plane once or raped a whole bunch of kids.
My wife was friends with Ghislaine.
Exactly.
And we went one time to the beach.
So I could see there being an element of that, of Trump thinking he's in the files in this way and then saying release them, and then they get them and then they're like, oh, this is not the files that we thought the files were. But ultimately, in my mind, the real crime here is that, or not crime, but the question mark, the ultimate question is that we're acting like the files are just the papers on the desk, as though that's all we could possibly know about Jeffrey Epstein, right? Is whatever files they already collected, that's all you could ever know. Like, bro, Leslie Wexner is free. He's an American citizen living in Ohio, in one of the biggest mansions in Ohio. And no one has ever asked him a single question. No one has ever deposed him. No one ever has gone to him and said, hey, why did you hire two different pedophiles to run two different sex trafficking rings simultaneously?
And the only client of Epstein that's publicly known, right?
The only client.
Like actual finance client.
Yes. Yes. And why did you hire him? Why did you give him power of attorney? Please show us the internal documentation of such, right? There's never been any real investigation into Leslie Wexner, and he is clearly a linchpin of this whole thing, right? And so there's somewhere where you could just go and ask some questions. Even if statute of limitations has expired on this or that, it hasn't expired on conspiracy.
Sure. And not to mention the fact that even if all the Epstein files have been totally deleted or destroyed, you still know who all the witnesses are, so you can go re-interview them and get all those documents back. Stay with us. We're going to be back in 1 minute with more from Ian Carroll on the other side.
All right, Alex wanted you. He gave you the methylene blue drink earlier. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And he wanted you to do a review.
Hey, I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project, and I was pretty efficient in sleep. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
That's good. Well, that's probably that might be because you're hanging out with me. So we gotta maybe try the
I think it's the Methylene Blue.
If you want to shine like the sun, you've got to burn like it. You're listening to Tomorrow's News Tonight with your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geyser. This is Tomorrow's News Tonight. We have 54 minutes left of this relentless broadcast. Ian Carroll is joining me in studio. Ian, we were talking about the nuance and breadth of what Epstein really is. Mm-hmm. Please continue.
Well, right before the break, we were talking about how many loose strings are still attached to, shall we say, the living. There's still people walking around that know everything. And I was talking about Leslie Wexner being one of the most powerful and wealthy of those loose strings.
Yes.
Maybe Ehud Barak would be another one. Although that would... I mean, yeah, he's still having blackmail scandals. Just last year, the end of 2024, Ehud Barak's company, Paragon, got into a giant blackmail scandal in Italy because it came out that Paragon had sold their software, Graphite, which is a hacking software, to this little Italian firm, and that Israeli intelligence officers were visiting the little Italian firm and giving them orders to do illegal operations using the blackmail, the hacking software to blackmail people and create dossiers and all this stuff. And Ehud Barak was one of the founders of that company, along with Ehud Schneerson, the ex head of Unit 8200. So Ehud Barak is still very much kicking. But beyond those two that were highly involved in the Epstein operation, you could talk to Sarah Kellen. Sarah Kellen was Ghislaine Maxwell's right-hand gal, right? Probably an ex-victim that was then groomed and recruited into the operation. She was instrumental in recruiting the girls, in normalizing the behaviors, in grooming all of Epstein's victims, but she was also keeping the books and keeping the schedules and keeping the receipts. She knew most of everything. She sure knew enough to incriminate some people, and she has been living a perfectly normal life for the last 10 years. She got married to a NASCAR driver, changed her name, was living in a multi-million dollar mansion in New York, and had a second one in Florida. No one's ever prosecuted her, and she is a known associate, co-conspirator of this plot, right? That apparently trafficked girls to no one. So that's just a small handful. You could go to Glenn Dubin. You could go on and on and on to his
associates. It's not like the JFK assassination where if the files were deleted, we would never know.
No.
All of these people are still alive.
Yes. And the thing that I most got out of the Tucker and Daryl interview, between Daryl's deep expertise, which I've never seen Daryl speak in free, like in live context about Epstein, and his knowledge is so deep from the level of research that he does. And when you pair that with Tucker's integration into Washington and how many people he knows and all the experience he has, there were a lot of subtle comments that kind of got exchanged in that interview that just really reminded you how many people knew Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
And how many people knew exactly what Jeffrey Epstein was up to and why they called the plane the Lolita Express, right? In reference to the film Lolita, right?
So I didn't know that.
So Tucker does it better
than me. What happens in the film Lolita?
I have not seen it. It's apparently about a older guy or someone who kidnaps like a 12-year-old girl and takes her, like not kidnaps, but like grooms, abducts, and takes this like 12-year-old girl away for 4 years and like rapes her and stuff.
Right.
It's like a whole film, book. I think it's...
Who coined the term Lolita Express?
I don't actually know. I'd be curious if any of the original journalists that broke the story know where it first came from. I presume, my guess is that it just kind of arose...
Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow. And meanwhile, what's Rachel Maddow reporting on today?
she got a major pay cut. Nobody's ever... The only time you see Rachel Maddow is when we play a clip on InfoWars and make fun of her.
I'm sure that my parents are still watching Rachel Maddow every week, and I bet that she
still loves them?
Yeah, of course I do. I also know that they're watching Rachel Maddow.
Do they still love you?
Yeah, they're confused.
Really?
Well, they love me, and they love what I'm doing, and they're so proud, but they also are trying to listen to Rachel Maddow and all of her lies, and it's confusing.
When was the last time she told the truth about anything?
It was certainly before the Russia hoax.
They tried to give Alex hell for getting one thing allegedly wrong 10 years ago. CNN, MSNBC, they got 10 things wrong 1 hour ago.
Yeah, exactly. Two-tier justice system.
Wow, unbelievable. Yeah. So why do you think it is that Trump has been so, for lack of a better term, bizarre in his handling of this in the last 2 weeks? Well, like, if you had to guess for, $1 million, write down what you think's really going on, what's happening, and then it was assessed later by an unbiased source for accuracy in order to award you the $1 million. What would you guess in order to win that goal?
I think it's got to be some sort of blackmail, whether it's directly on Trump or a family member. It might not even be stuff that was originally gathered by Epstein. It could be more recent by something else. It could be blackmail against American politics. Like, it could be blackmail against the political party of MAGA, or it could be blackmail in terms of, like, we'll release this operation that you were involved in 2017, or we'll, like, it's hard to say.
It doesn't seem like a coincidence that within 24 hours of him saying it was a nothing burger, there's a Nobel Peace nomination from...
No, and BB is on his way over here already when he says it, and it's just all so weird. And, like, for example, J.D. Vance was on a podcast just... Like, I forget which podcast. It was Theo Von, right? Just a month or so before, being like, yeah, we should really release those files. Like, where are those files? Those are be good files to release.
I don't think he knew.
No, of course he didn't. JD had no idea what he was walking into. He thought that he was just being like good old, like, Scots Irish hillbilly walking into the White House, being a normal American dude. But little did he know that he was Thiel's pick for 2028 president to rule over everybody for the technocrats. And when they're going to call in all those favors, little did he know that he was Trump's scapegoat for, like, whatever the heck he's going to do. It's madness in there. I don't know.
So, man, you really don't like Thiel, do you?
I do kind of like Thiel. That's the
problem.
I
still haven't decided.
No, Thiel. I hate
Peter Thiel.
F Thiel. Like, I mean, I'm sure he's probably a perfectly, like, great guy if you're his friend. Everything Thiel stands for is abomination. Like, everything Thiel
is
bringing
into
this world.
All that stuff?
Deeply, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I am, too. Because though they're smaller than other major DOD contractors, the amount of valuation for them is insane, and the amount of revenue growth is insane.
Well, and how deeply enmeshed they are, right? Palantir did a thing that, as far as I'm aware, not really any other contractors thought to do, which was to pair the massive power of big data and LLMs and this, like, the cutting edge of AI with, like, battlefield information tech.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's other, people chasing that goal, but Palantir seems to have pulled way out ahead in that race and done it while being led by some very influential and connected people in Peter Thiel, being able to, like, literally
hold
JD
Vance's hand.
He was one
of the first outside investors,
hand.
If not the first in Facebook. Yeah, I think he invested $100 million.
Yeah.
I'm sure he made billions upon billions on top of that.
Yeah, and all the other
thing about Peter Thiel is, if you take Thiel and Thiel Capital and you look at somebody like Eric Weinstein,
mm-hmm.
Eric Weinstein was the CFO for Thiel Capital for many years.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, and this is where it gets subtle, is that I'm sure, like, so J.D. Vance, for example, he's met Peter Thiel, and J.D. Vance is, like, some normal dude that's, unless he was Illuminati and they went to Skull and Bones, who knows, but I'm sure he knows Peter Thiel and is like, this guy's so cool, he's so great, he got me inspired to work in tech, and he's, like, donated all my campaigns, he's a normal guy. Yeah, like, yeah, he is, but what is his company actually doing? Like, you could work for the guy and he'd be a totally normal guy to work for. And you could even work on the technology. And it's like, yeah, it's a revolutionary technology. It's a logical technology. And we are going there. But once you get into these highly powerful surveillance systems, weapon systems, technology that has the power to do great evil or great good, little moral subtleties matter tremendously.
Yes.
Right. And for example, Peter Thiel's stuttering ineptitude to answer moral questions about Israel's treatment of Palestinians speaks to someone who is indifferent to human suffering if it furthers his corporate goals, right?
Well, and he's got a history of sociopathic tendencies. I'm not saying that he's a sociopath, but if you look at what he did to Gawker after they added him as a homosexual, he entirely conspired to destroy that whole company.
Yeah, I don't actually know a lot about that story.
There's a book about it by Ryan Holiday called Conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that you could have ChatGPT summarize it for you in bullet points.
Nah, probably better to just read it, though.
Yeah, but yeah, Gawker, I believe it was Gawker, mm-hmm. outed him as homosexual, and Peter Thiel just went on a mission to ensure that Gawker didn't exist anymore, and he bankrupted him.
And they don't. Right.
And which is understandable. I mean, there's so many of these leftist media outlets that I would love to bankrupt, but not for a personal vendetta when they've got families. And you know what I mean? There are people that I've worked with that I wanted to try to get fired because they were so terrible at their job. And then I think to myself, but they have a kid.
Yep.
And I don't do it. You know what I mean? So there is certainly a lack of empathy there, I think, with Thiel. But I'm not prepared to say that he's evil yet just because I don't know enough. And that's such a powerful allegation. But I do trust you, and I don't doubt you. And my concern about Palantir, and this is something, I worked for a DOD contractor years ago when I was in college as an intern. And they would pay you like tons of money because they had to spend their entire budget every single year. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the same funding the next year. It was called Energetics Technology Center, I believe. And what they would do is just research and propose for the DOD new weapon systems, whether it was like sonic-based detection for minesweeping or ballistic missile technology to have the ballistic explode at the exact right moment on impact in a naval battle. I mean, they were doing some cool stuff. I don't know how consequential it was, but it was a small nonprofit. Of course, it's a nonprofit funded by the government. And when I worked for them, it was really a part of the conversation how important informatics was. And what informatics is getting the information that you want from a massive amount of data.
Oh, yeah.
So for an extended period of time, our government has been able to collect all data, all of your text messages, all of your call records, presumably recordings of all of your phone calls themselves, all your emails, all the stuff that Snowden came out with. It's been at least one, probably two, maybe even three decades, the government's been able to collect all of your data. But the problem is they don't have enough people to go through all that data. So they would do some cute things like only call attention to things with certain keywords that might be indicative of a terrorist attack or a bomb threat. Yeah. But this is where AI comes in. Because if you have a sophisticated artificial intelligence, large language model or otherwise, it can go into the massive data that already exists, and it can pull out all of the stuff that it's prompted to pull out about anyone at any time. So if they want to incriminate you, Ian Carroll, and they have no idea whether you've ever done anything wrong or not, you can weaponize this artificial intelligence to go into all of your communications and identify where you might have made a mistake on your tax forms or lied on your taxes.
Easy.
You ever emailed anybody about it, right? So this is the concern that we should have about this future AI, not the only concern, but a huge one, because informatics now is completely disrupted. It's not about manpower. Now the technology is there for them to know whatever they want, whenever they want, about whomever they want. This is government omniscience.
Well, take, for example, the ICE protest that just happened in LA, right, a couple weeks ago. And they're burning Mexican flags, and it's this whole thing, and they send in the National Guard, right? You might be on the side of those protesters. I'm generally not, right? Like, if you're deporting illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, you know, deport them. But it would be pretty easy for the government to try to make the argument that those are domestic terrorists, right? That they are burning cars, they're burning the city, they are generally burning America for another nation, holding another nation's flag. Right.
They're even burning themselves.
And so they were targeted. Palantir was used to help target them and to help identify them all. Right.
Yeah.
But what if Palantir was used to target Occupy Wall Street? Like we were protesting. Exactly. Right. Where does the line get drawn? Because maybe Trump does great. Maybe Trump is totally playing chess and he does a great job for 4 years. But then who's in next and who's in next and who's in next? And when every single thing that every single American does in any digital context, which is about to be everything we do, is recorded, AI scraped, AI organized, and then AI tabulated, I guess, like recorded. That becomes a very fine line between who is a domestic terrorist and who is exercising free speech.
Yes.
Right.
And this is the problem that we have with our government, generally speaking. It's one of the criticisms of American politics that the likes of Xi Jinping have. It's the difference between dictatorship and democracy, for lack of a better term. I know it's a constitutional republic. Hitler even wrote about this in Mein Kampf. He wrote about how necessary it was for the entire political party to be subservient to the leader of the party in order for continual progress toward a long-term vision. This is an advantage that the CCP has over the United States of America. We change leaders every 4 years or every 8 years, most commonly every 8 years, and our vision, it zigs and zags in a way that some of our competitors, like the CCP, don't. I mean, you've even got Bibi Netanyahu, who's been in power 18 years?
Plus or minus with some breaks.
Plus or minus with some breaks. So that's a lot of continuity of government that doesn't really exist here. And so I think you're exactly right. I mean, we could be using Palantir right now to capture ICE protesters that are burning down cities. And then some leftist like AOC gets in 2028 and says, yeah, I know those J6ers were pardoned for what they did on J6, but what about what else they might have done? And they just weaponize that AI to go in and pull that. And look, I'm not blaming Palantir. There's got to be some technology that does what Palantir does. I'm just not sure that you can ever guarantee a lack of corruption with this level of power. I mean, this is very much Ring of Mordor.
It really is, yeah. I mean, at the very least, you need some very strong, very clear legal codification of how it can be used, how it cannot be used, and how to protect our constitutional rights from it. And I don't see anyone talking about that. I don't see anyone in the government pushing for that. I certainly don't see Peter Thiel or the technocrats pushing for any limitation on their power. And obviously the government's not going to push for limitations on their power. And so that's where the base concern comes from, is that the power is being invented and no one is going to do anything to put any guardrails around it, right?
Yeah. Derek, let's run that clip that Brett suggested of the godfather of artificial intelligence. Do you have that ready? Run it.
Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, Excellencies, dear laureates, ladies and gentlemen. This year, the Nobel Committees in Physics and Chemistry have recognized the dramatic progress being made in a new form of artificial intelligence that uses artificial neural networks to learn how to solve difficult computational problems. This new form of AI excels at modeling human intuition rather than human reasoning, and it will enable us to create highly intelligent and knowledgeable assistants who will increase productivity in almost all industries. If the benefits of the increased productivity can be shared equally, it will be a wonderful advance for all humanity. Unfortunately, the rapid progress in AI comes with many short-term risks. It has already created divisive echo chambers by offering people content that makes them indignant. It is already being used by authoritarian governments for massive surveillance and by cyber criminals for phishing attacks. In the near future, AI may be used to create terrible new viruses and horrendous...
Well, there you have it, folks. What are your thoughts?
I think that we do not even begin to understand the depths of risk we're taking with AI.
I agree.
And I hate to say it, but we're not going to have to wait long to find out. And I think the best, the easiest place to see this is an AI video, because AI video is so immediately understandable, and and we all see it, and it's evolved so quickly in the last 4 to 5 years. And I don't know if you've been looking at the state of AI video right now, but a whole bunch of new updates just came out, like VO3 and all these other, it's all these different models that can produce video that are better at different things. And every different company is racing to be the best and the first, but they're basically all indistinguishable from real life now. And they're basically all easy to use by anyone. Right. And that's just the stuff that we publicly have that we all can use. Right.
I mean, God knows I've used AI video creation.
Exactly. You're excellent at it. Yeah. And it's a wonderful tool for art and for creativity and for productivity, for creating things when used appropriately. Right. But it is also so easily a scam, so easily a deceptive tactic. But it also just it undermines truth in a way that we don't have an answer for yet. And that is just AI video, not to mention AI information, AI research, AI Google searches, but then AI teachers, AI personal assistants, AI advisors, AI lawmakers, and AI judges, right?
AI lovers.
AI lovers. And that's the big one that is already well on its way. Sure. I was at Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and quite uncomfortably, they had a lady robot in the corner.
Perfect market.
With like her face and everything and the skin. And she was like in there in the corner. They could be like, hello.
But take a closer look.
I stayed the hell away from that. To be fair, I was like, we were busy and we were just passing through, but I saw it and it was over there. And I know, because I then did a bunch of research in the last month about robotics, AI, drones, etc., to do this current presentation. And the current state of it is an arms race, not just to the first like human companion robots, but also obviously to the first militant robots, the first soldier robots. Really,
I saw this. I saw this art display. I think it was in China somewhere. I'm not sure. And it was a robot dog, the ones that we see all the time, designed to attack any human that walked by, and it was on a chain. And so when you walked by this art exhibit, this dog is just like going nuts after you, right? And it was just, oh my God.
But see,
my concern, you touched on this. My concern is, look, we're in an information war, and we have been for many years, really 50 years at least, honestly going back to the beginning of written history.
Yep.
But it escalated a lot after World War II, and then escalated to another degree after the internet age, right? And now we're at this pinnacle. Traditionally speaking, when it comes to propaganda, maybe the CIA can get involved in a Hollywood script. They can come out with Top Gun at the right moment to make everybody just hoorah against the Russians, and then come out with a new Top Gun at the right moment to make everybody hoorah against the Iranians or whatever.
Yeah.
That it's been a blanket approach. I mean, when we denazified Germany after World War II, we dropped flyers just like the Maoists would drop flyers, just like the Nazis would propagate, literally at the root of propaganda. Information. It was a blanket approach to trying to win over a percentage of the populace. But with artificial intelligence that understands every individual's psychological profile, their behavior history, their thinking infrastructure or patterns, their pathological tendencies, the level of propaganda that's going to be conducted on our children, my children, is insane, because it's not going to be a blanket ad or a blanket movie or a blanket push in rap like it was maybe over the last 30 years. It's going to be, for my daughter specifically, we have to say this. And for my other daughter specifically, we have to say that. And for all these children specifically, however many millions of them there are, if we specifically present them with information in this intentional way, we will get them all to arrive at the same conclusion. That is what I'm concerned about.
Absolutely. And that could be used to educate the most intelligent, capable, confident, well put together generation of humanity
he would, but
that
we've
ever known. Right?
Yes.
That could be used for such greatness if we only had real patriotic, moral people in charge. But instead, it is already and will be used to sell the maximum number of products to your children, to teach them to be dependent on government and on corporations and on outside influences. And we are all just letting it happen.
Folks, we're reaching the climax of the information war. Please go to the alexjonesstore.com right now. 25% off this weekend only. I highly recommend you get the power bundle. It's Methyl Drive and Power Plant, both formulated by Rex Jones, developed by Bigley for the Info Warrior. Get the Power Drive bundle right now and be the reason we will always be on the air. And stay with us for more from Ian Carroll on the other side.
I need support. We are maxed out, and I can do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court. And got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30. You're a VIP, and when you want a T-shirt or you want a supplement, you get it, because it'll just build up in your account. $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue, don't want to do it, cancel. One click, it's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjanastore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly. And that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil and we're turning the tide and we're winning. And then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil. You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively? There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think being persecuted is, oh, you want to stay away from that? Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight? No, it's like John Paul Jones said when he got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, right when it was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress. He said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones in direct action. They said, here, it's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships 2-3 times the size. Just ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy's been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue, to some other show, just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you, asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again, for all of our collective futures, to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
Shows lie to you about what's happening now. Tomorrow's News Tonight tells you the truth about what's happening next with your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tomorrow's News Tonight. We have 24 minutes and 13 seconds left of this transmission. Breaking news, 8 healthy babies born via IVF. I support IVF, but using the DNA from 3 people. In the United Kingdom, medical professionals have successfully delivered 8 babies using a pioneering fertility procedure that incorporates DNA from 3 people. This method aims to safeguard children from inheriting severe mitochondrial disorders. The births represent a cautious advancement in assisted reproduction, prioritizing family health and stability. It's basically like Gattaca, the movie Gattaca that everybody had to watch in high school biology when they learned about the DNA infrastructure. And look, I understand. I got a genetic bleeding disorder, type A hemophilia. I would understand if my parents, knowing that their children were prone to such a disease, engaging in IVF and trying to modify the genetics of their future child so they wouldn't suffer from a predisposition or a condition that they want to prevent. But it seems like this is a dangerous path to lead down.
A slippery slope. Let's clarify here real quick so that I'm understanding that headline correctly. 8 people were born.
Yes.
But each of those 8 people included DNA from 3 people.
That's correct. That's correct. So there's no like one father.
Yeah.
Presumably. I don't know if it was the mother's or the father's DNA.
What could possibly go wrong?
Can you imagine?
How? Did we not just have issues with an mRNA shot that was maybe vaguely modifying the slightest bit of DNA, and suddenly like millions of people are having heart? Yeah. I mean, not,
we've been
debating
about weather modification for 2 weeks, Ian.
Like,
and this is baby modification, bro.
This is human genome modification.
Babies.
It is. I mean, this is so beyond designer babies. We've had designer babies for quite some time, and there are all kinds of moral quandaries with that. I mean that you've been able to like select, so you can already get a whole bunch of your eggs examined and make sure that they're all good.
But you're at least
good.
Choosing from your own.
You are choosing from your own DNA, yes.
But this
is the next step.
This is like, hey, I want him to be 6'5". This is Gattaca level stuff. I want him not to have a heart condition. I want his IQ to be 133.
Yeah, and what could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, here's the deal, man. Nature has an awesome way of balancing out things naturally, not to be redundant. We have about the same amount of women born as men, for example.
Yep.
There's a little bit of a difference, but it balances out naturally. And let's just say that we live in a civilization that really values artists. And so everybody pays a big buck to have millions of babies with the same exact interests and personality profiles. That just totally screws up the natural diversity, and not to mention the classism of it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people of similar IQs and similar attractiveness tend to marry people of similar IQs and similar attractiveness. They often have complementary genes. But if we're getting into this designer thing, I mean, we're going to screw up the population long term. I think this leads massively to depopulation, actually, in the end.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, I mean, let's pretend that there's no God and no religion to even talk about here, because holy, this is everything not godly about this universe. But just from a like logical standpoint here. Okay, so if we let the normal humans just use this technology, they're clearly going to make horrible decisions, like you've just elucidated, right? Or they're all going to want their babies to, like, you know, look like T-Pain or like whatever. You know, like, people are fickle and dumb, and they do not figure this stuff out. If you could choose how your baby was going to be, and everyone could choose how their baby was going to be, we'd wind up some pretty big problems pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's even as simple as we just don't have any garbage collectors because everyone wanted to be a superstar. But let's be real. It's not the regular people and the poor people that are going to be using that technology and being able to choose their babies. It's the rich, right? And I mean, let's be honest. Like, if you were Bill Gates, wouldn't it be a lot better if we had, you know, the 1,000 richest people in the world being able to choose the ideal offspring and having as many as they wanted, and then everybody else doesn't really need to take, like, give birth anymore because you're not needed anymore? So why wouldn't you just get them all addicted to sex with robots and porn and just forget about the whole birth thing? I mean, you're all infertile anyways because we gave you so many shots, and we can just, you know, breed babies in tubes now. So
it's Brave New World meets 1984.
Yeah, it's dark. It's real dark.
How can, I'm just asking you, man, I've got two little girls, 4 and 2 years old. How can I prevent them from falling into this trap? Like so many in my generation, our generation, fell into the social media algorithm trap.
Mm-hmm.
How can I prevent my kids from falling into the AI manipulator trap? I mean, everybody's got their own personal cult leader now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just comes down to ultimate, like, teaching is such an art form. And when you're teaching,
you're formerly a teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I was an alt teacher, so to speak. Like, I didn't get a degree from a college. I was raised by two teachers, then started volunteering, and then worked from there. I just, like, worked my way in because I was good at it. Yeah. And I would argue I was. And ultimately, the thing that I think that so many of us do wrong with our young people in this world is we try to protect them from things that they don't need protection from, and we fail to protect them from the things they do need protection from. And those two go hand in hand, because when you're trying to protect them from bad words and swear words and, like, offensive things and things that they could never understand, you're failing to directly address the things that they are coming into contact with that they need your help understanding, right? And so a good example is telling them, like for example, you have like a 7-year-old boy and you tell him, you're not allowed to use the computer without me, or like, you're not allowed to go to those sites. But then the 7-year-old boy goes to his friend's house and goes to the sites, and then he sees the boobies and he's like, oh, well, I'm not allowed to see that. I can't talk to my parents about that. So I'm just going to keep doing it with my friends in private.
That's what happened to me when I was growing
right?
up.
Right? That's what most people in our generation wound up doing. And you wind up with no spiritual guide through this thing that you need a spiritual guide through.
Yeah.
Right? Because you, as a parent, you're trying to protect them from this thing in this really, like, blankety way, when you should have been just being upfront with them of like, look, there's this stuff on the internet that is designed to manipulate your brain. There's these advertisers on the internet. There's these people using sex and porn on the internet. There's these people using lies and deception on the internet. And because you are young, I need to be here to help you. Like, you need to find ways to talk your kid into understanding from as adult a perspective as possible why they need help understanding, right? And then being there with them for them to ask questions to, for them to bring their concerns to, because ultimately kids are in such a wild environment of media these days that most of their parents have no concept of. Most parents these days, like even the really hip ones like you guys, like your kids are growing up in an environment where they're going to know so much more about computers than you ever will. Give it 10 years and they will know things that you don't even know you don't know. And so being able to build mature trust from an early age with your kids, to be able to go through that journey with them of like them coming to you with concerns, coming to you with questions about the hard stuff on the internet, like whether that's pornography or violence or lies or advertising or whatever it is. It's just such a wild west of information, and AI is breaking all of that wide open. So for example, you've got young girls and AI beauty standards. Like, I don't even know what just make of AI beauty standards. We come from the
They're
generation.
Not even naturally possible. It's like Barbie.
No, we come from the generation where Britney Spears, like the Britney Spears generation of celebrities, gave our entire generation of young girls anorexia and bulimia, right? And that was from what was actually realistically attainable if you are anorexic or bulimic. And so nowadays we're in this world of like untruth that we don't know how to deal with. And trying to pretend like we know how to parent through that, and trying to pretend like you can protect your kids from all those questions, I don't see it happening.
I'm with you. I'm overwhelmingly concerned about artificial intelligence and the future of our civilization. And it seems more and more obvious to me every day that goes by that the depopulation conspiracy is real.
Oh, yeah.
Not just because of offhand remarks that a Kamala Harris has made, or an Elizabeth Warren has made, or a Klaus Schwab, or Bill Gates has made, but because everything that I witness is incentivizing people not to have children. Ultimately, I think the root problem, at least in the United States of America, goes all the way back to inflation. And so you have this rampant inflation in the 70s when we go off the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation requires both parents to have to work in order to support a family, which catalyzed the feminist movement as a psychological cope. I actually think that feminism came as a reaction to the cultural shame that a man was no longer able to provide for his whole family. And so in order to cope with that shame, it was women coming forward and saying, we want to work, we want careers, right? Then you have this massive inflation. What happens is, since men and women have to both work, they both go to college to get degrees so they can have real careers. And instead of building a life together like they used to, they merge lives later. And then as inflation gets worse, people save up for longer before they have children. And then they have fewer children as a result of having them later. And then since they both have to work and they're having children, they outsource the raising of their children to the state. And then now we have a situation where we criticize Gen Z or millennials for living in their parents' basement until they're 30. And there is legitimate criticism there. But the reason they're doing that is because there's no way they can afford a house on their own. And nobody's going to get married if they don't have a house. And so ultimately, I think that almost all of our problems, from racial tension to depopulation to cultural shifts in family values, go straight back to inflation.
But it sounds like you're saying that it's incidental, not intentional.
I don't know.
You don't think the bankers know these things?
I think
can't know the whole game.
I think it's both.
Yeah, you obviously can't know every step along the way. But like when you, so I'm kind of joking, but I'm also speaking from like when you read like conspiracy literature from the 30s through the 60s, kind of like a whole generation ago and then some maybe. Oh boy, did those conspiracy theories talk about the Illuminati and the bankers and the whatever different name.
Test tube babies.
Exactly. About them having these exact sort of plans revolving around the monetary control and then the population control.
Well,
and
what does the Illuminati or the establishment gain from depopulation? Just fewer people to have to control?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, fewer people that they have to control, fewer threats to their power structure, fewer people. Like, basically, the way I see it, tell me if you see it a different way, is the more close the middle class is to the upper class and the more of that middle class there is, the more threats to your space, right? If you have just one giant lower class that's in poverty,
right,
far away from you in the upper class, you're free to play as long and as however you want.
They need
a
base to fund the political class, but they don't want a base that is a drain on the political class.
They don't want anyone moving.
And it's why you see a lot of this Bill Gates stuff and a lot of this depopulation stuff. It actually plays out
first in third world countries before it plays out here. Even if you look at fossil fuels, for example, if you look at this whole climate movement, this whole climate change movement, I have a couple of conspiracy ideas for the real reason behind it. And there's a few, I think they're all true in some dimension. But it's by far third world countries that depend on fossil fuels the most. We can eat it a little bit if we switch to wind or solar and it's less efficient. We can pay for that and eat it a little bit here in the United States of America because we're prosperous still relative to other nations, despite the fact that we're not nearly as prosperous as we could be or have been. But in a third world country, when you rely on fossil fuels for heating and cooling and incubators in your hospitals and being able to actually make and prepare food in your home, these are the people that are impacted first. And a lot of these countries, like in Africa, for example, they'll agree to these asinine green energy international treaties and deals without hesitation, equivocation, or mental reservation because they're so dependent on aid from other countries. And so they just kind of play ball. But then they have millions of people that can die as a result. Like if we just turned off fossil fuels, millions upon millions of people would die as a result of this. And that's where I see the depopulation agenda playing out, not to mention the fact that Bill Gates, for example, laced a bunch of bedding nets with poison because it was supposed to stop malaria. And he knew that people in third world countries use those nets for multiple purposes. And so they fished with the nets that were laced with poison. Then they ate the poisonous fish and they died to the tune of millions because people who are poor use things for multiple purposes. They're resourceful. That's where I see the direct
attack. Not to mention all the medications that have been being tested out on Africans
for
a long old time, right? I mean, the way that I see it is it sounds very conspiratorial if you've not read the literature, if you've not actually read these people's ideas. But when you study eugenicist thinking across the last 100 years, whether that be in the Nazi regime or long before them or in much more modern times, like I would argue that Bill Gates is strikingly in the center of a eugenicist sort of a genre of thinking. And a lot of the things that he has said are very eugenicist things to say. That strand of thought has always swam in at least the corner of the scientific world and sometimes in the mainstream of the scientific world. Because it is a scientific thought to think that like some things are better than others, and if you have less of the bad things and more of the good things, everything would be better, right? And over and over and over again, that human thought of we could improve this rears its head in a way that is out of touch with the fact that there are some lines you don't cross, right? Yeah, sure, we could improve the population by killing all the poor people. That's clearly a horrendous thing to think, and there is no world in which that's okay to do. And so these sorts of articles about IVF, people being born from three people, it needs to be sat into the context of realizing that there are an awful lot of very wealthy, powerful people that have somewhat eugenicist mindsets today.
And it ties directly into artificial intelligence because even Larry Fink has come out and admitted this. The response to the depopulation crisis in the West, whether it's in Japan, whether it's in China, whether it's in the United States of America, is to replace the labor force with robotics and artificial intelligence. That's why we're in an arms race with China right now over AI, because we understand from a national security perspective that it's untenable for us to have such dependence on China to supply all of our goods. Yeah. I mean, we saw what happened during COVID where we couldn't get toilet paper, we couldn't get insulin. There was a number of different products that we were unable to get because they all came from the Shenzhen in China. And so from a national security perspective, we're trying to win the artificial intelligence arms race so that China can't win it and then corner the market again on manufacturing at the cheapest, best cost into the 21st century. And so I think the eugenics and the AI stuff really tie in, and it reminds me of a theological detail. And regardless of whether you believe in Christianity or God, I would argue that the Bible is still capital T true, regardless of whether you believe or admit that it's lowercase t true. And what I mean by that is it's metaphysically true and principally true, regardless of whether you believe any of it actually happened, right? So I would say, for example, to somebody who says Jesus Christ never came back from the dead, I say, no, it's capital T true. Regardless of whether you think it literally happened, doesn't to me as a Christian, and I identify as a Christian, it's not even important to me whether it literally happened, because the capital T metaphysical truth of it is so much more profound and important than the historical truth of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the Old Testament, we have God making us in his image. And now
we as human beings, seeing how that went, are making artificial intelligence in our image. So it's like two deviations away. It's one lower resolution away from what we as human beings inherently understand as metaphysically divine. We're making something even more broken and distorted and prone to the fall of man. It inherits all of the sin, but none of the free will that we were given in creation. And I think there's some massive...
Then we are putting that creation in charge of our own reproduction, right?
Yes.
Of our own procreation and of raising our children and of running our schools and our prisons and our government and all these things, right? And oh boy, is that Pandora's box.
Yes.
If I've never heard a more articulate
and there's no stopping
the fall of humanity. There is no stopping.
So the question then isn't how do we stop it? The question is how do we handle it?
How do we ride with it?
We have decided to accept the Ring of Mordor.
Yeah.
How do we use it as best as we can without it going back into the hands of Sauron?
With great power comes great responsibility,
Spider-Man,
Chase.
Never gonna get old.
And the truth, the way I feel about it is that we all have that responsibility. Even though we aren't all powerful, even though we don't all have influence or money, we are all utilizing the technology and our minds are all in the space. Because ultimately, our culture is the collective nature of all of our thoughts, right? Some of us have a little more power in the real world than others do. But if we are all interfacing with this technology, we all have the same power to learn from it, to grow with it, to think about it. And imagine tomorrow everyone woke up and suddenly was an extremely intelligent, very wise, critical thinker that had, learned a lot about how the world works. Every American suddenly is like on it. Don't you think that America would do an awful lot better that next day? And
well,
every day thereafter.
Who would harvest our fruits and vegetables, Ian, if we did that?
Well, maybe we would need robots. But what I'm saying is that it's on all of us to think and to learn and to use the technology for what's best, for what's right, for our own betterment, for humanity, as much as possible right now. Because A, we are being trained on it, but B, it is being trained on us. And if we outsource all of the use of AI if we outsource the responsibility for making it and the responsibility for using it and all the technologies to all these very powerful, very weird people at the top of the pyramid, then they're going to have their way with it, right?
I want to get your feedback on this, Ian.
Yeah.
Let's run clip 29. This is Tucker Carlson, and I've heard him say some of these things. I've heard stories of this privately, and he's come out more publicly about it recently. Because this ties directly into what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Run clip 29. Let's unpack it on the other side.
I had one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had. I had with a very spiritually attuned, very smart friend of mine. And I was saying, I'm a man and I hate lying. And I just want to be honest about it. Like there people do, bad sexual stuff. And I don't. But I don't judge that much. Because you're like, we're all in the wrong circumstance capable of anything. But I said to this person, I don't get the underage girl thing. That's they're not into it. They're kids. Maybe I have too many kids or something. I'm not being selfish. I'm just being honest.
No,
I just don't get that. I don't see any appeal at all.
It's a pathological obsession. I mean, Epstein was into girls with braces specifically.
Exactly. So what is that? And the conventional explanation is, maybe I'm being too honest, but I think this is really revealing because it's not about sex. It's a spiritual thing. And I said, what is that? And this friend of mine said, it's the thrill of destroying innocence. That's
yes.
What it is.
Yeah.
And that is the definition of evil. That is Satan
there.
That
was,
it's taking something pure. I guess this is maybe, I'm the only person who ever thought of this. Maybe you already have. I had not thought of that. I was like, it's not just a sexual attraction. I think, underage girls with braces are hot. They're not. No normal person thinks that. That's bizarre. No. The idea is that I'm destroying something that's pure.
Yeah. And throughout history.
Well, that's just. That's Satan acting. Sorry.
Throughout history, people have looked at that as something that confers power. That's what child sacrifice.
Exactly.
Is, and
in every civilization that sacrifices children winds up falling very rapidly after that. What are your thoughts of this?
I think it's absolutely true, and I've thought this many times. Ever since I started doing this research, I had the exact same question of what is really going on here. As a young person, you kind of learn that these people are out there somewhere, but you never really have to confront it and think about it, right? And once I started doing research into Epstein and into the whole network of satanic ritual abuse and pedophilia and child trafficking, just more and more that same question kept coming up of what are they actually doing? And he's so right that it is evil. Like it's actual evil. It's the destruction of innocence. And there's an element of it too that is why, like, for example, why are they buying so to speak, this like American underage girls as opposed to you could get infinite cheaper like I hate it sounds so crass and disgusting.
Asia or like Ukraine or Russia.
Foreign underage girls that are disposable, for lack of a better term, because no one even knows they're missing, right? But Jeffrey Epstein's operation was specifically targeting girls off the streets in Palm Beach, Florida. And there's a part of that is that these people have so much power and so much influence that not only are they so depraved that they want to destroy innocence, that they want to destroy the most holy thing
they want on this planet,
but they also want to do that to the ones that can't be bought. The one that is the most unattainable, the one that is the most protected.
They want it because it's not for sale.
Exactly. They want it because it's not for sale.
Wow. Well, and the thing is, you eradicate innocence, then you eradicate hope. If you eradicate hope, you eradicate faith. And if you eradicate faith, then you can become God to a hopeless civilization.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing from the technocrats.
Exactly. And a lot of people throw the word satanic around, and I think that a lot of times people that don't think in godly and satanic ways mishear that phrase.
Sure.
Tucker is not saying that
it's literally the devil with a pitchfork.
Yeah, he's not saying that it's literally that they are worshiping Satan because they do this thing. He's saying that it is indistinguishable in what it represents.
It's 100% evil and adversarial to all that is good.
Yeah, that destroying innocence like that for the pleasure of destroying innocence is the embodiment of everything that evil could be in this world.
Well, and depopulation, I think, is the embodiment of Satanism. I mean, if God's first act to become God was to create, then anything that seeks to destroy creation is literally the Antichrist or literally anti-God, literally Satan. Yep. And that's what we're faced with right now, folks. And like I said, regardless of whether you believe it literally or not, it's still capital T true. We're in the middle of an information war. It's reaching a climax. It's getting more intense. We've had major victories over the last few years with people waking up, but we are faced with unprecedented challenges, obstacles, and evil. It is not given up. We have to defeat this enemy entirely. And the only way that we can do that is by following people like Ian Carroll, supporting their work on X, wherever they are, on YouTube, wherever they are, following InfoWars, sharing the broadcasts and the transmissions, and taking advantage of the incredible sales at thealexjonesstore.com. Right now, store-wide, 25% off every single product that we offer this weekend only. Please go now. Get the incredible Alex Jones signature knife. Get the Power Drive bundle. You'll love it, and you'll keep us on the air. Stay with us for more.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy, he's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule, it should have two hydrogens on it, and like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order. It's Alex Jones.